Okay, welcome to episode 27, Never Run Anything podcast. This podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown, so we'll see how we get on. Seems to be going all right. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Spotters Club and Atomic Hercules, and coming in July from Tribute Press, Tony Osmond is a movie star. No relation. Today we have a returning chum, the host of the excellent, which I've been listening to this morning, Mega City Book Club podcast, Judge Eamon Clark. Hey, Eamon. How you doing, man?
I'm fine, thank you, Tony. I'm back from outer space.
Yeah, it's almost exactly a month. Where's that month gone? Seems weird. Oh, seems like God, I only spoke to you yesterday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. When we did some Daredevil.
Exactly, yeah. Have they, have the 2000 AD crowd forgiven you for talking about Marvel Comics yet, or is it...
Yeah, I only had one comment saying, well, what's the connection with 2000 AD? No, there wasn't one. It's just me. Just comics.
So in that vein, would you like to tell us what you've chosen to do today?
It's more American comics. It's Marvel again. We are going to be talking about a single issue of Uncanny X-Men, issue 205 from May 1986. And if you want to read along at home, it's on Comixology for £1.60 at the moment.
Okay. There you go. Good stuff. Yeah, and it is very good. Now, before I dive into the summary of it all, I've just got two questions for you, Eamon. Firstly, you don't strike me as... I'm not being rude, but you don't strike me as an X-Men reader somehow. How did you come across this?
So I was an X-Men reader back in the day. So basically, the Lee and Kirby reprints in Marvel UK in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how I heard that, you know, Claremont Byrne was supposed to be good in X-Men, but I did. And I went back, and when I was buying American comics in the 80s, this is what I was looking for. I'm buying this one. And I think I bought this one probably off the shelf as it came out in 1986.
Good stuff.
You know, I have to say, I did always have a thing about the X-Men and Wolverine. So I know he was the most overused.
He became that, didn't he? Yeah.
He did, yeah.
This is the sort of start of the rot almost, isn't it, I think?
Yes, yeah. You know, Claremont and Miller perhaps had started it, and then this, and and suddenly he's everywhere, and he's got to be in every team.
Yeah, the Avengers, you know. I mean, he's sort of vaguely in Power Pack at some point, you know.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, and the other question, which is kind of, you've kind of stymied that one a little bit, my second question is, I was going to presume this was a random issue you picked up wrongly, but it just seems to me that, beyond that, you seem to quite like stories set in Christmas in the snow.
It is that, isn't it? It's another Christmas story in snow. Yeah, there's a lot of snow for Barry Windsor-Smith to draw and colour. It's another Marvel hero being torn apart at Christmas in the snow.
It is, isn't it?
And then putting himself back together again,
Having some kind of sort of existential crisis, you know, around Christmas.
There you go, that's what it is. Yeah. I didn't realise that. I didn't see the connection, but you're quite right. I've chosen another born again.
It is, I suppose. In a way, it's like a quicker one. He's like, gets it done in quickly, doesn't he?
One issue we've done this time,
So for those who don't know, X-Men 205, like you say, May 1986, writer Chris Claremont, story and story by both Chris Claremont and Barry Windsor-Smith. I suggest that Barry Windsor-Smith is going to be the emphasis of this discussion. Art by BWS, art by BWS, colours by BWS, Barry Windsor-Smith, letters by Tom Orzechowski, edited by Ann Nesenti. Anne was a regular editor on the X-Men, and I think very friendly with Chris Claremont. There's a Chris Claremont documentary on YouTube, and she appears in a lot of it. Not everyone does. I'm going to say Chris Claremont might be a difficult character to get on with, I think, on occasion.
Where do you stand on Chris Claremont then, Tony?
I've told you my boring question.
Yes, I know.
I really love the X-Men. I don't think everything he did. I like the Wolverine mini. Rather than saying what my feelings are, I'm just going to use this sort of vague anecdote. Do you listen to the Kayfabe podcast?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's very sort of 90s wizard centric, but it's by a couple of three or four creators at a time. It's very cool at the moment to listen to, and it's actually pretty good. They had Claremont on. They had a great episode with Dave Gibbons. They've had some really good people on there, but they had Claremont on the other day. I live about 10 miles from my office. I was listening to it in the car. I drove off from my office. I drove all the way home, and Claremont didn't stop talking for the whole journey.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
I think that's where I sit on him. Yeah. He keeps going about being British, but he's got this weird mid-Atlantic accent. I don't know. What about you? Where do you stand on him, dude?
Well, I'm interested in this one because... you know, Barry Windsor Smith, we think, comes up with the story, but then Chris Claremont presumably does the dialogue and actual sort of scripting from that, or probably just the dialogue. It's a bit, I suppose, it's a bit like the old, you know, the old Lee and Kirby model, you know.
Yeah, sort of the real, like, dig deep Marvel, you know, thing where he told him a story over the phone.
And that's right. Tells the story, and then like Lee comes back later on and puts the dialogue in. Because I think I went and had a look at the Weapon X book again.
Okay.
Which Barry Windsor Smith wrote it entirely himself. And actually, I thought it could do with somebody like Claremont handling the dialogue on that. So I thought, you know, I liked the fact that he takes on the dialogue. It's a Marvel comic from the 80s. There's an awful lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
But I thought he did a pretty good job on it. But it's mainly a Barry Windsor Smith issue, isn't it?
I think you're right, man. Yeah, and we'll talk a bit about it in a minute. There's a quote that I picked out from it that I thought was a good one that shows Claremont's ability to write this sort of grand dialogue. And it's Wolverine says to Katie Power in it, "There's a part of me as wild and fierce as my namesake. I'm a hard man given to hard ways. When I fight, it's to win. That isn't pretty, and it sure isn't nice. But being a man, that means choosing to grow and change and put aside the old ways." And it's very well written. It's written with an accent almost on it. You know, he takes out the D's on ands and stuff like that. And it's a nice bit of dialogue, I have to say. You know.
Yes. Yeah. And I always did like, you know, it's a terrible sort of white male sort of comic fan thing to say, but you always did like the idea of Wolverine, that he was barely containing that sort of rage, that berserker, his feral side, and he was trying to become a better person all the time. And of course in this issue they sort of, it's almost taken away from him and then he gets it back. So I always did like that. And I liked Claremont. I mean, 17 years or something like that he wrote the X-Men. I mean, that's a run, isn't it?
So Liz, a little synopsis before we go on for people that are curious. So it's 23 pages full color X-Men. It refers back to X-Men 33 if you're reading at home. There's a little reference to that. So Lady Deathstrike and three former Hellfire Guards, which are the ones that Wolverine slices up in X-Men 33, you know, the famous in the sewers into the Hellfire Club.
Wolverine lashes out.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that famous panel. They get cyborg and adamantium upgrades from Spiral in the Mojoverse. Don't turn off. You know. Deathstrike wants to kill Logan and remove his adamantium to revenge her father. Her father discovered adamantium. And they attack Wolverine in the Xmas snowy shopping season. It all kicks off. Katie Power from the Power Pack loses her nanny and gets hitched up with Wolverine, who has lost his sanity for a big chunk of this. And Wolverine recovers it. He's sort of, he speaks Japanese. It's a big fight scene. It's got an overly long prologue. It's quite the issue. But you're right to say that the art is the real beauty of it to me, I think, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So we had a couple of we had a little chat online about things to point out and have a chat about, and I think we should work through a few of them because I think there's definitely some really interesting stuff in there, man.
Okay.
And I know that you're I'm a big Wolverine fan as well. I'm pretty much up to a point used to buy everything he was in. Probably one of my favourite characters. I think, like you say, that whole turning feral is a little bit overdone. But he was kind of at the forefront of the popularity, as you said, of characters who carry not lethal
deadly weapons.
More sort of nasty weapons, I suppose. I mean, you could kill someone with Thor's hammer, but it's not a bladed instrument, is it? You know.
No, and that's it. And Thor's hammer could thump people, especially could thump people like, you know, bad guys or the Thing or the Hulk, and they would just, you know, they would fly backwards out of the panel towards us or something like that, but there wouldn't be blood. It wasn't sort of you know, flesh being carved or torn apart by blades or bullets. And it always did puzzle me slightly when they introduced characters who were supposed to be heroic characters but who carried bladed weapons. The one that I always thought was hilarious was Valkyrie from The Defenders. Who was notable for a couple of things. Firstly, for those strange sort of conical things that she wore on her sort of breastplate.
Most famous,
which always, always used to give me a funny feeling in the, you know, in the nethers. But she also, she carried a sword, and yet she was forever, you know, I think they would actually say this, she would hit people with the flat of the sword.
Yeah, I remember. So I was thinking about that with the swordsman character. I think he says that as well.
Right.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it? Really, you've got something that's just going to take someone's head off.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you just whack them with the side of the flat bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, swords, the problem I think people have with swords is they look really cool, don't they? But then how
Yes,
do you deploy
exactly.
them in a fight? You know, the Black Knight was always the same.
The ebony blade, yeah. What's
Yeah.
he going to do with it? He should be running people through with it, but he's just sort of like knocking them off horses or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of some other characters, sort of older characters. And I think you can always say, well, Thor, you know, oh, pardon me, Iron Man has got a battle armor, you know, and he's got, but they're repulsor rays. So they're rays
Yes.
that sort of send people away almost. It says it in the name is almost that weirdness. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we talk X-Men, I mean, Cyclops' eye beams just knock people over. They don't sort of cut through them.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Yeah.
And then, of course, you come across Wolverine, and there he is. He looks cool. He's introduced in Hulk or whatever, but he's got blades,
Yeah.
literally. You know, we all know that. Everybody knows they're part of his body. He's adamantium blades. He is supposed to be the character who cuts and harms people, but you just can't show that, of course.
Yeah, it always seems to have moments with, I don't know, Aurora or Scott Summers or someone shouting, "Not now, Wolverine," or something like that at him, you know, as he's
Yeah.
doing something. I was trying to think the beginning of that, and I kind of think he may be, for me, of that sort of nasty weaponed creature, because I remember seeing him in, I don't know if you got that Mighty World of Marvel that he appeared in, which was Hulk 180 and 181. And even then, as a kid, I was
Right.
thinking, wow, that's pretty rough that he's, you know, he's trying to stab people with blades. It's,
Yes.
yeah. Which he was kind of a
Yeah.
villain in that.
Yes, he was, as he introduced the sort of like, you know, the villainous character hunting the Hulk, Weapon X. And then, of course, yeah, joins the new X-Men and just becomes, for a while, the dominant comics character in the world, isn't he?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, he does. And he's got his costume changes to being sort of slightly more feral at times. But I
Yeah.
wonder if that opened the gate. That opened the gate for stuff like that Miller did with Elektra. Even when you look at someone like the Turtles, you know, they
Yes.
carry scythes and samurai swords and, you know, this sort of thing, all the way through to the likes of the 90s nonsense of stuff like Witchblade and even
Yeah.
Spawn, I suppose. You know.
Yeah. I mean, actually, that's right. Because Elektra, yes, she carried her psi daggers, and Bullseye famously stabs her with one.
Yeah.
And you see, so you don't actually see her sort of being run through because the blade cuts through her, but strangely doesn't cut through her costume.
That's
So it just
true. I've never thought of
bulges
that.
out the
Yeah.
back.
Yeah.
So you don't actually see the blood and guts that Bullseye has created. And there was that issue of the X-Men where Storm, Aurora, I think when she was powerless for a while, gets into a fight with the underground
The Morlocks.
mutants,
Yeah, you're right.
the
Yeah.
Morlocks, and she gets into a fight. Is it Callisto is the
Yes,
leader of the
that's right.
Morlocks?
Yeah.
And she basically, the fight ends with Aurora stabbing her. And you just think, oh, the X-Men don't do things like that. But
Yeah.
they, yeah,
Yeah, it
suddenly
was
they do.
I
Yeah.
wonder whether Cochran and Lemwe knew what they were starting when they introduced Wolverine to the X-Men, you know, and they thought this is going to be the slippery slope that will end up with Rob Liefeld having a character with 83 bladed instruments on him, you know. It's like
Yes. Yeah.
Um,
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, presumably Jerry Conway didn't quite intend the Punisher to be, you know,
Yeah.
the phenomenal success that he turned out to be. Because there, you know, there we get into very dodgy territory, don't we, Tony? You know,
Yeah.
when they've got supposedly heroic characters with guns who just basically they just kill people.
Yeah. What does that say to the
Yeah.
kids of America, you know,
I
at the
know.
moment as
Yes.
well? Well, funny enough,
Yeah.
I'm talking about that on Monday, or tomorrow it is now, tomorrow with Russell Olson. We're doing the Vigilante character, which was kind of a take on the Punisher, and the Punisher was a take on, believe it or not, a book series called The Executioner, Mac Bole and the
Oh, right. Yes, I
Executioner.
remember those.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
which I read some of recently, and they're all they are about is different techniques of killing people, sleeping with women, and what kind of gun he's got. Yeah, that's
Yes.
basically, you know, and I think there's been
Yeah.
320 of them. Yeah, it's a funny world like that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. The Vigilante, that's got that couple of Alan Moore
It
issues, hasn't
has.
it?
That's right.
Ah, they
Yeah.
were terrific. Jim Bakey, I
But
think.
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's an
Yeah.
interesting character that goes all over the place, but he comes out of the Teen Titans, talk about tomorrow's, but he comes out of the Teen Titans and then basically becomes this sort of monster who just goes around killing people before he regrets it. But yeah, interesting. So, I mean, kind of a fallout from Wolverine, because Wolverine is always regretting his past and then returning to his past and regretting his past and returning to it. You know, it's constant.
Yes. Yeah, it's a constant battle for him. And of course, a constant story trope for Claremont and the X-Men. Yeah, Wolverine's feral, berserker past. And in this issue, he's so badly injured by Lady Deathstrike, and they go on to be called the Reavers, I think, but I don't think they call that here. They're just the sort of former Hellfire Guards.
Yep.
He's so badly injured by them that he sort of reverts to his berserk, feral, almost wolf-like state.
He does, yeah.
And he can't even speak English. And then
he reverts so much he speaks Japanese. I'm not sure if that's what happens to all people when they revert. But
yeah, I know. Start speaking Japanese, yeah. And then there's Katie Power, bizarrely, from the Power Pack, in this comic about people trying to kill each other with bladed weapons. And there's this five-year-old who's managed to get separated from her school choir on a Christmas outing. Interestingly, you know how in Tom and Jerry and the Peanuts cartoons, the grown-ups were never seen, or they were just a pair of legs?
Yes, they do that with her, don't they? Yeah,
they do
that
with her.
Yeah. She's a great character, and she is kind of the hero almost of this, isn't she? It's almost like a two-hander with a major villain, because it's all about her. She's the reader almost for a big chunk of it, you know.
She gives us our narration. She gives us our point of view, doesn't she? Because Wolverine's not talking. And when he is talking, he's just sort of like muttering in Japanese. And she's telling us the story, because she's literally got confronted by this sort of terrible fight that's going on in the snowstorm.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine sort of snatches her up and runs off with her. It's quite amazing. Yeah. You know, you put the Power Pack, you put a five-year-old superhero in this comic, but it sort of works.
It does. It really does. And I think she'd been in a previous issue of X-Men as well, hadn't she? She'd encountered Wolverine in that. I think famously on the cover, he's picking her up with his claws. But Power Pack 1 came out and was created by Louise Simonson and June Brigman. Katie was the youngest of four siblings. Came out in 1984. Marvel at the time had a policy where all editors should write a comic as well at the same time, which is why Louise Simonson wrote this. She wasn't keen on writing it, but she soon got into it. Ran 62 issues, was sort of reasonably popular. It was always the last thing on the cheese board I used to go for, but whenever I read it, it was quite good. Alex, who was 12, who was called Zero G. Julie, who was 10, Lightspeed. Jack, who was 8, Massmaster. And Katie Power, who was 5 and was called Energizer. And I think if you get to about issue, is it 25, they all swap their powers around, I think.
I think I've got the first 20 issues somewhere in a box.
Not bad. Yeah. Louise Simonson's a really great writer, I think. I don't think she gets the credit for being as good as she is. Yeah. Should we talk a little bit? We'll go back to some of your points again, but I just wanted to talk a little bit. Well, this includes your points. Is the art of Barry Windsor-Smith, in that he did an issue a year, you pointed out to me, which I had not realised. I'd missed out on that point. And so he did 186, which was Life Death. 198, Life Death 2, 205, this one, and 214, which was a sort of Dazzler and Rogue team-up thing with Malice Towards All, it's called. And after that, you get Weapon X, you get Marvel Comics Presents. So people think Weapon X was a little bit before that, I think, because it did come sort of significantly later on. We'd seen him develop the ideas, you know.
Yeah. If you want lots of naked Wolverine, that's the book for you.
Yeah. Weapon X. Who doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
So what have you read all those? Did you enjoy them all?
Yes, I've read them all, I think. And I did enjoy them. I enjoyed A Life Death, I always thought was a terrific issue for X-Men.
The first one particularly I'm fond of, I think.
Yeah.
It's very quiet
as well.
Yeah.
It's quite an amazing issue for a superhero comic, you know, where the main character has lost her powers and he's basically having dinner at some guy's apartment.
Yeah, spends the first five or six pages in bed. Yeah, not that way in bed, just asleep. Yeah.
And I just, you know, I thought we would talk about Barry Windsor-Smith and his career, because he's gone away from comics and then he's come back to comics. And I think he's done that a few times, because he's gone off to the world of fine art.
Yeah.
So here he is back in the 80s, and he's more or less doing one X-Men comic a year, one issue a year. But he's also coming up with story ideas as well, and he'll do the whole story for the Weapon X book when that comes out, and tell the sort of like, you know, another version of Wolverine's origin story. But yeah, it's just amazing. I remember him from the black and white Conans. Again, Marvel UK reprints. I've got one here on the desk, in fact, Savage Sword of Conan, number one, 8p from March 1975.
And he was
But
really in
Conan
his
was nine.
Kirby phase at the start of that, wasn't he? He was just sort of, regenerating from that into his current style, I think.
Well, I mean, I had this thing in our notes about, you know, there is this idea of the 10,000 hour rule, which I know has been slightly discredited, but it's particularly, I think, in Malcolm Gladwell's book about it, that you have to do something for 10,000 hours to become an expert.
Yeah, definitely.
And I worked out that if you work 9 to 5, it's about 5 years.
Okay, all right, okay.
So
Yeah.
he was Barry Smith, wasn't he?
Yes, that's
And
right.
he's, you know, he's, because you showed me an early Daredevil page he did,
Yeah, which is my
where I
first memory
thought.
of him. I think it's Daredevil 52, which also I saw in, I think it's Mighty World of Marvel. I think they had a lot, and it was a bit of a change because mostly it was Gene Colan artwork, and then suddenly I'm presented by this, and I was kind of a Kirby fan as a kid, and I thought, oh, this is a bit different, but it's very different to this, you know.
Yeah. And what I like, I mean, I like this with the 2000 AD guys. What I like is that sometimes you see an artist and you see their
Yeah,
development over
definitely.
time. You see them at the start and you think, well, clearly that's better than anything I could do, but it's still, you can see, well, that's not quite right, perhaps, or that's not quite right. And then as they get better and better and better, and it develops. So his early stuff, he is a bit Kirby-ish. And then by the mid-70s, his Conan work, it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know.
You know, what happened to you? You know, how
It
did you
really
get to
does, yeah.
this?
A lot of people mark Conan One, incidentally, as the beginning of the Bronze Age. So that's where the
Yeah.
Bronze Age starts. I've got a little couple of points to read out about Barry. So Barry Windsor Smith, aka Barry Smith, depending on which period you hit him in your comic reading history. Born May 1949 in Forest Gate in London, attended East Ham Technical College. Hey, do you remember the technical colleges?
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
First work were pin-ups in UK superhero comics with Marvel characters in Terrific and Fantastic from Oddams. Now, I know you talked to Keith Richardson about Oddams recently, didn't you?
We did, yes, because we talked about, because now obviously Rebellion own that archive and the Oddums stuff is in there. And that was interesting because they would have comics which were, again, in the 60s, reprinting Marvel stuff, but also they'd have one or two attempts at a British superhero. So we talked about a strip called Johnny Future, which, you know, it's a strange strip, but he got a Spanish artist, Luis Bermejo or Bermejo, who was just fantastic. But they, as you say, they were doing some Marvel reprints, Oddums, in the 60s. So, yeah.
Yeah, I only
So.
own a couple of them. I think I'm too young to have been buying them off the shelf, but I remember finding them in charity shops and buying the odd thing. And they'd always surprise you with the odd thing in the middle of them. There'd be like a little comedy
Yeah.
strip or a text piece or, you know, or Spider-Man in black and white with a weird, they changed the banner around and all this sort of thing. And they did have a lot of pin-ups, and I think that's where 1967 he first did his. So an interesting entry level for him. He would have been, what would he have been, 18 then, I suppose. That's pretty good.
Yes.
So he and Steve Parkhouse flew to the US in the summer of 68. That must have been a hell of a summer.
Yeah.
And he almost immediately got a job on the X-Men 53. And then he went on to do Daredevil 50 to 52, which is I think where I saw him the first time. He did some stuff on Nick Fury. He did some stuff on, like you say, he started his Conan run. Roy Thomas involved Smith in the writing of his stories, like The Frost Giant's Daughter, which is just spectacular. Yeah,
Yeah.
just incredible. We'll talk about the bit of the period of his career you prefer the most in a second, but I'm aiming at that one, man. I tell you,
Right.
he showed he worked on the majority of the first issue, 24 issues of Conan, and then I think he had some immigration issues and got deported. Or
No.
on his website, I think it says something like "got sent home" or something like that. So I'm not sure what
Right.
that is. I think he was kind of living out of a suitcase half the time, and then around that time he did some Avengers issues, which I absolutely loved. I put some panels up from them the other day. Really beautiful stuff. Worms of the Earth, Bram McMorn, if you've seen that in Savage Sword 16, just incredible stuff.
Right.
And then he managed to, as somebody who we'll talk about in a second, is he managed to ink over Kirby. So he inked Kirby's work on the Treasury edition of Bicentennial Battles.
All right.
And it's a funny moment because we've seen, as you said, we've seen his sort of aping, almost homaging of Kirby. And but by the time he got to ink that, he had regenerated into his sort of Conan-y style, and you can see that the inks are strong. I really love the issue; it's an incredible thing. But the inks are not what I'm used to on Kirby. There's I don't know, a slightly lighter touch to it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I shall have to look at that one.
Good stuff. Yeah. And the other thing is to mention is he worked in the studio with Jeff, who later became Jeffrey Catherine Jones, Barry Windsor Smith, Mike Kaluta, and Bernie Wrightson. Have you got the studio book? It's quite a famous
one. I haven't, no.
Yeah, it's quite a thing, apparently.
Right.
And then the other one I want to mention, just rattling on, is have you seen the movie, Oliver Stone's movie, The Hand, with Michael Caine?
I was reading about this. Yeah. Is it Michael Caine basically playing a version of Barry Windsor Smith?
I think so. And the comic strip's by Windsor Smith, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, he does the comic work. He does the strip for it, doesn't he? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's just a little potted summary of him. But yeah, incredible stuff.
Like that Jack Kirby comic, or no, Jack Kirby art turning up in Argo.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's the only reason I bloody watched that film is to see an actor play Jack Kirby for about a minute.
Jack Kirby, yes, I know.
Yeah, good stuff. I think that art is owned by Jim Lee. He's got the original art, I think, is owned by him. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's a huge...
For the Lords of Light film, or whatever it was going to be called.
That's
right,
yeah. He's a huge Kirby fan. He speaks... If you watch, I think it's Comics Britannia, he mentions Kirby and holds a copy of a Kirby comic up and has a mini orgasm over looking at it. And his first Kirby comic was The Double Life of Private Strong. But he only met him the once when he was 18. It's the only time he ever met him. But spoke very highly of him. I think he describes him as being a lot shorter than he imagined. But there you go.
Right.
And like you say, he went off to study fine art. And that, when he came back, he had that style that we see more often from him now, which is almost like a classical rendering. There's a statuesque, you know, like a Greek statue element to his figure drawing, maybe, do you think?
Yeah, he's got that sort of classical art, or as you say, almost sculptor type depiction of human anatomy.
Yeah.
So it's beautifully delineated. It's not too ridiculous or exaggerated. It looks like, you know, Wolverine, because Wolverine in this issue has got very little clothes on. He's just wearing his trunks basically, and I think he's got one boot because he's been ripped to shreds by Lady Deathstrike, which we haven't seen because that's happened off panel.
Yeah.
But so he's got, you know, his line work for the anatomy is beautiful. And then, of course, he colours this himself.
Yeah.
And he does, it's strange because, like, Kirby, when he developed, you know, when he got cosmic and he made some interesting colouring choices.
Yeah.
And Barry Windsor Smith in here, colouring himself, and he does things with colours and you think, well, that shouldn't work. But of course, in a comic book, it does.
Yeah.
You know, these vibrant purples and pinks and bright reds and oranges that you see in some of the sort of colours.
In the sort of tech element of their armour stroke costume, it's sometimes you think it's long before the Matrix and where everything's got to be dark and grey and, you know, green and red or something. You know, it's a strange rainbow effect almost coming off them, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, Lady Deathstrike and the cyborgs have got this weird tech, and it's, as you say, it's very colourful tech, and it sort of fuses with their body, and it's but highlighted in his weird colouring choices, which are just so beautiful to look at. Yeah, so I mean, this is, as you say, this is his fine art period, and it's just it's quite amazing to look at. And there's pages where there's thankfully not much dialogue, and it is just Windsor Smith's artwork, which is just so stunning for a one off the shelf.
Yeah. I was
X-Men comic.
I was watching, you know, YouTube is like the pit of hell in relation to people's opinions and stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
So I thought I'd go onto YouTube and watch some interviews, try and find some Barry Windsor Smith stuff. There's not a huge amount out there. But I found some American dude, let's put it nicely, going through a Barry Windsor Smith comic, but he was doing it from The Essential, which is obviously black and white. And he was saying, you know, you can't really make out what's going on. I'm thinking, because it's a black and white reprint, you knob. You know.
Yes.
It's it doesn't work in black and white, I have to say. I probably agree with him on that point, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to see the line work, but other than that, it doesn't pop as it does in this. And like some of the, I mean, is it the third or fourth page where you get the view of the street with the buildings and the snow? Which reminded me of some of Mazzucchelli's stuff we talked about before. It's just amazing. You know, it's just incredible.
It's a lovely panel of, you know, a detailed street scene at Christmas time, people sort of trudging through the snow. And the more you look at it, the more there's going on, you know, with these little characters in their overcoats. And as you say, it's very sort of street level New York, quite Mazzucchelli. I can see, you know, Alex Toth in there as
Yes, yeah,
well.
lights and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's such a lovely image.
It really is, yeah. And
It's got one too many panels of narration over it,
it really
unfortunately.
has, isn't it? Bright yellow narration right over the top of it, yeah.
Yeah.
They use coloured panels for the narration on this and commentary. But I couldn't really make sense of who was saying what as it was coloured. I don't. Is there a colour code to it? I don't think there is.
I thought that Deathstrike and the Cyborgs were yellow panels, I
Ah, okay. I
think.
think what put me off was if you go to the Wounded Wolf page, it's a solo adventure starring Wolverine and the X-Men. They've done that in yellow as well, which kind of
That's in yellow
phased
as
me
well, yeah.
slightly. But yeah, no, I
Yeah.
think you're right, man. Yeah. The falling snow is just incredible in that. Well, in all the pages, but he actually draws every bit of snow, doesn't he, and colours around it all. Yeah.
That, I mean, the opening, you know, we could just talk, we could do an episode just about the splash page, Wounded
We
Wolf,
could, yeah.
Stan Lee presents, and then Barry Windsor-Smith showing the snow, showing the colours, Wolverine. I mean, you know, one of the things we know from of Windsor-Smith from this period and from his Conan period is he loves the depiction of blood trickling across of human anatomy, doesn't he?
Yes,
There's a
yeah.
lot of blood across Wolverine throughout this issue. And there's, you know, Katie Power in the foreground. It's just a lovely page. And the colouring that's going on in that is wonderful as
Yeah.
well.
I've got it on I've got the issue, but I was reading it on Marvel app, and the
All right.
backlit stuff is lovely.
Yeah.
It really brings it out. I have to say that's as much as we see this as the evolution of Barry Windsor-Smith and, you know, of Marvel Comics, and, you know, this is the way that Wolverine was going. I do find that a very Marvel-esque splash page. It's got the drama, you know,
Yeah.
the melodrama almost of a Marvel page, isn't it? You know, it shouldn't really work like that. It shouldn't really just suddenly be standing in front of her like that, but it just so works, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, we're off and running literally because he picks her up and runs away.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then Deathstrike and the Cyborgs are tracking them down, hunting them down for the rest of the issue. And it'll lead up to that sort of marvelous one-on-one fight between Wolverine and Deathstrike,
Yes.
which I think. You know, Claremont very sensibly, and he'd done this before with Wolverine, that after a couple of panels, well, maybe more than a few panels, but after a few panels, he'd slowly withdraw the dialogue, you know, and
Okay. Yeah.
he wouldn't do the comic book thing of have them talking to each other while they're hitting each other,
Yeah.
and then you end up with one page which is free of dialogue altogether, and it's just them fighting, and it's
That's the page, isn't it? It really is. And with
that's the
him
page.
spitting blood and
Literally, yeah, literally, Wolverine literally spitting blood as they tear each other apart with their claws.
yeah,
Yeah.
amazing, isn't it?
Ugh.
Yeah, I
Yes.
mean, one of my de I've started writing devil's advocate questions as I go through these comics, because
Right.
sometimes we get
Okay.
overexcited, we love them too much. So sometimes I have to like hold myself back and put something in I don't actually totally mean, but I'm going to ask anyway. So what is this just a pretty fight, Eamon?
Well, honestly, Tony, yes, it is.
It kind of is, yeah.
It's a pretty fight issue. It's one of those issues again they did time and time again, where Wolverine would revert to his feral nature, and they'd get almost a wordless battle between him and someone else, and then at the end he would pull it back and say, "No, I'm a man. I'm not an animal. You know, I'm not a monster."
Yeah, yeah.
They did one. Wolverine, or rather, Uncanny X-Men 173, when he was in Japan and he fights the Silver
Right,
Samurai.
yeah.
And again, I think the issue has got the front cover by Paul Smith has got Wolverine and Rogue sort of running
Oh, I
towards
know
the
the one.
camera.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in that one, there's a battle between them, and you sort of see the fight choreography and you think, yeah, it's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one is the same,
Yeah.
that it does come down to this one-on-one fight. I mean, it tries to make a point, which is that Deathstrike has done to herself, her body,
Yeah.
she's done it deliberately, what Wolverine had done to him. And, you know, Wolverine always hated what had been done to him.
Yeah, there's that element of
So,
what makes us a monster. You know, there's that
yes.
element to it, isn't there?
Yeah. And I mean, that was one of the things about the X-Men, is that they were these outsiders, the mutants. They were outcast. They were a representation of sort of like, you know, minorities or persecuted groups. And yet they had this you know, you could tell that they were the good guys. They had this nobility. And Wolverine, who seems like he should be one of the bad guys, always has this nobility, this sort of this spirit, you know, which thankfully usually wins through for him. Because we'd had Miller's and Claremont's Wolverine miniseries.
Yeah, which I really liked, which really nailed this on, didn't it? You really got
a
sense.
Yes, it did.
And I think there was a genesis of us really liking Wolverine in stuff like Dark Phoenix, to us feeling him that he was our character in the miniseries, and that carries on through this. He becomes the favourite character, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you can see, again, I mean, we talked last time about the Marvel Cinematic Universe looking at certain comics for their origins. You can see Hugh Jackman, some of the stuff that they did in the various X-Men and Wolverine movies, you know, their variable quality, we know. Yeah. But some of the stuff that they did of making him this character actually hates what he does, in a way. He hates what's been done to him. He hates what he has to
do. He's tortured, isn't he? Yeah, utterly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But is it a pretty fight? Yes, it is. An astonishingly pretty fight.
Yes, and that is comics. Do you know what I mean? It's comics. So we allow that. And there are echoes of other things like we just talked about there. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because this happens slap bang in the middle of Secret Wars 2, which I'm sure you're a huge fan of, Simon.
Oh gosh, what was his haircut called? The Jerry cut,
Which was basically a sort of white Michael Jackson is omnipowerful and invades the Marvel Universe. I think this was kind of where it sat with me. So what they had to do is they had to have a series of one-off issues. They had 203 was an issue with the Beyonder, which was a tie-in. 204 was a Nightcrawler solo story. Then we get this, and then 206 leads on from Beyonder story with the X-Men and going and cleaning up New York after the battle. So the benefit of having that pause put on the Marvel Universe, because everything, you know, we suddenly entered that world of events, didn't we? Everything going on in Secret Wars 2 allowed the X-Men to explore their personal, you know, each person. Say we got a Nightcrawler character who had also had quite a popular miniseries, and we got the Wolverine one. So, yeah, it's an interesting period. And I think I'm kind of glad that we get that. It's sometimes those little solo moments in comics, in team comics, where we get to see into the insights of the character. I know Legion of Superheroes did it famously with Giffen a few times, and they're some of my favourite issues. But I wonder, I've not seen the interviews. I tried to find out why, but I can't find out why Barry Windsor-Smith suddenly took this on. Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know enough about it, or if I have, I've forgotten it all.
Yeah,
but I mean, clearly, because you also shared with me an introduction, I think he wrote for one of his collections.
Yeah, the Young Gods thing.
Where he's, you know, he's had his problems with the comics industry over the years. You know, I mean, he's not been paid well for some of his earlier stuff when it's been reprinted.
Yeah,
I know he had issues with how the Weapon X was reprinted, and he thought it was on totally the wrong paper for his artwork, and he sort of like, I think he had a love of comics, and he keeps going away from it and he keeps coming back to it, is what it seems to me. But I think he loves the Wolverine character.
That's what I was thinking, man.
And
this love of comics that he's had since a kid. It keeps pulling him back in. Yeah, I know what you mean, totally. Is Wolverine an extension of what he could have done with Conan, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, again, you've got somebody who is the best there is of what he does, and what he does isn't very nice.
Yeah.
But also, who doesn't really like what he does, but sees it as a means to an end. And, you know, Conan becomes, you know, he's more than just a hack slash barbarian as the series progresses.
Yeah,
isn't he?
I suppose they both got their destiny, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an interesting point you make about that. Leading on from that, I was going to say, choosing another one from my devil's advocate list of questions. Do you think Marvel and the X-Men was huge news at the time, selling bucket loads? Do you think he did one a year to pay for other projects?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure it's like, who was that guy, that actor, Stephen Burkoff, who played the bad guy in Beverly Hills Cop and Rambo and in Octopussy, I think.
Okay.
And he would do these big Hollywood bad guy parts in what he regarded as terrible films, in order to basically finance his independent theatre work. And you can see that in a way. You wonder why, if he's taking on Barry Windsor-Smith is doing the odd X-Men or Daredevil issue in order to finance some of his other stuff as well.
Yeah, I think it's that's the same as the old Orson Welles. He did that famously, didn't he? He did.
Yes.
Was it History of the World with Mel Brooks or whatever it was, or fucking was it Transformers the movie in order to finance?
He did a voice for Transformers,
Yeah,
didn't he? Yeah.
in order to finance what was the Falstaff movie? Was it
He
Tears at
was
Midnight?
always
Yeah,
trying. Yeah. He was always trying to do Chimes at
that's it.
Midnight, whatever it was
Yeah,
called.
that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an
Yeah.
interesting one. I did wonder that. And Bone, he's a class act, and he carries it off. I'm going to say probably my favourites of the four we talked about there would be Life, Death, then this one. I think by the time you get to the Dazzler Rogue issue, it's kind of lost its way. It becomes a bit more less focused, put it that way, than the previous
Yeah.
ones. Yeah.
I mean, I think in this one, you can see he just loves the characters. He loves doing what he's doing with the artwork and the colors. Life, Death, such a fantastic issue for a superhero comic where, ostensibly very little actually happens in it. It's just a conversation between two people.
Yeah,
Yeah, fantastic.
definitely. And we like those quiet moments in the team books. Sometimes there's so many characters and so much things going on, I can never bloody work it out, you know?
And anything that saves us from Secret Wars 2, for goodness
Yeah,
sake.
no, yeah. I'm buying you the hardback for Christmas. It's fine.
Oh, no, please don't. Secret Wars 1 wasn't great. Secret Wars 2, oh my
Yeah, I've
goodness.
no idea what happened, and I read it coming out. Yeah, no idea whatsoever. But the other thing I was going to say to you is about artists in competition with this. Something I noticed is if you so you have Rainy Storm, you know, it's Rainy Storm. That's a funny Rainy
Yeah.
Aurora in the sequence in Life Death One, and if you go to the following issue, which is drawn by J.R. John Romita Jr., it opens on Storm in the Rain, and I kind of feel that the presence of Barry Windsor-Smith in comics improved other people. I think people saw him as, I know some comic artists absolutely and quite like so revere his work, you know. And I think it's the old line, isn't it? You read something good, it makes you a better writer. You read a comic drawn so well, it makes you a better artist almost. Yeah.
Yes. And I think, his work, dare I say, in places, it's sort of experimental art in a
Yeah.
way. He's doing things differently to the way they've been done before, particularly with his use of colour. And you can see other artists like Sienkiewicz,
Yeah,
perhaps,
definitely.
who, start out in a much more sort of traditional artistic sense, and then after a while realize, no, actually, I can push this stuff. I can really do stuff, and you can see his artwork, and it's just like it's mind-blowing stuff. Yeah, so
Yeah.
people like that. And then of course over here, Mick McMahon starts as this incredibly punky
Yeah.
Judge Dredd penciler and inker. And you looked at it and thought, well, it's pretty good, but if I really tried, I might be able to do that. And then, of course, you watch Mick McMahon develop over the years and you'd realize, oh, no, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And he does, Mick McMahon does, I mean, getting a character that's similar to Conan, he does that Slain cover for the Warriors Dawn collection
Okay.
where he's got a huge axe in his hand and he's holding open the mouth of this sort of dinosaur time beast.
Yes, I know the one.
And I
Sorry,
look at that. I look at that cover, and then I look at the image from Barry Windsor-Smith, which was the cover of the Conan the Barbarian Marvel Treasury Edition from 1975. And it's a page that's in that book again, Tony, that we keep talking about, the Masters of British Comic
I know the
Art
one. Yeah, I know
from
the one. Exactly the one.
David
Yeah,
Roach.
yeah.
And of course, your colleague on the Awesome Comics Pod, Dan Butcher, I think chose this page.
Yeah.
If you've got the book, it's page 329. He chose that page when you all picked out a few pages from this book. And there's that image of Conan fighting on a pile of bodies. And it's just an immense piece of
Is
artwork. It should
incredible.
be. I don't know where it is, but it should be hanging in a museum somewhere.
Exactly.
Should be hanging in a gallery,
Yeah.
shouldn't it?
And it's an amazing piece. And in black and white, even it, I kind of think color would ruin it a little bit. I just love it in black and white, you know.
Right.
But the that is interesting because you could replace that with Wolverine, couldn't you? It's a similar thing that,
Yes,
you know, the
yeah.
bladed thing again.
Yes, it is a Weapon X sort of image in a way, isn't
Yeah,
it?
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you go on to read much else by Windsor Smith after this, after Weapon X?
I think this was you're headed into one of my periods where I step away from comics
Right.
myself for a
Okay.
while,
Yep.
because life
People
gets
do
in the
it. They
way and we
discover
start
girls and
doing,
things like that, don't we?
exactly, yes. So I don't know that my collection of certainly of X-Men, but particularly of Barry Windsor Smith, extends much beyond
Okay.
this. And looking back at it, I'm thinking to myself, well, you should have been tracking down everything this guy did, because look at this issue.
Yeah. And he doesn't do a huge amount, like you said before. We get some Machine Man, we get the Young Gods thing. I'd recommend the Archer and Armstrong, which is kind of kung fu monks, dinosaurs, immortal beings. It's quite the thing. It's quite incredible.
Kung Fu Monks and Dinosaurs. It sounds like the Tony Esmond focus group again, doesn't
Take a drink. There you
it?
go.
I've never read the Archer and Armstrong stuff. I have got Machine Man, and that was fantastic as
Yeah.
well. Particularly, I mean, his covers.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't. No, Archer and Armstrong's, that one's a total blank spot for me,
Yeah,
I'm
it's from a
afraid.
company that otherwise was a bit sort of just Action Comics, from Valiant back in the day, but there was this little sweet spot. Have you got anything that you don't like about his art at all? Is there anything that doesn't quite ping for you always?
Well, I mean, I said in our notes that his early Conan the Barbarian, I think it's great stuff, but you look at it and you can say, I think partly because he drew the young Conan as sort of like quite a lithe, slim
Yeah.
figure and not sort of muscle bound older man that he becomes. And sometimes I look at some of those images and think that's not quite right. But then as you watch, as the series progresses, it just gets fantastic. And we haven't mentioned, of course, he introduces Red Sonja,
Oh,
doesn't
so
he?
amazing. I read that last night in the Treasury edition I've got of
Right.
him. I think it's Treasury number 15, and reading it in that extra size is just amazing, and he keeps
Yeah.
trying to sleep with her. She looks slightly different, so she doesn't have the sort of steel bikini that we're used to.
She wears a chainmail
Yeah,
shirt, doesn't
what's wrong
she?
with that? Wasn't he thinking of the younger male readers or female readers at the time? Yeah.
She wears something sensible for somebody who might be going into combat,
Yeah.
as opposed to a steel bikini.
Yeah, just amazing, man. Just beautiful. Yeah, the Bran McMahon thing he
Yeah.
did is amazing. There's some Yeah, that's for me is a sweet spot there. I think I've got two things I'm going to mention. I think if you read Young Gods, there's a few sort of trades come out from it if you can track them down. The writing is just at moments quite strange. I don't quite get everything he means in his writing. And my other thing, which is probably people will hate me for, is I find some of his faces a little bit, I don't know, just. They don't quite have the piercing eyes that I see in other creators' works.
So, I was looking at his website last
Yeah.
night, and he has some of his sort of like sketches and character designs. And he does that thing, particularly for, Storm from the X-Men
Yeah.
Aurora, when she was in her Mohawk phase. And you can see it when artists start to reduce the faces to just a few strokes of the
Yes.
pen.
Yep.
It becomes less detailed, and she's sort of like depicted just like a few eyebrows and cheekbones, and that's about it. Whereas, that close up of Wolverine's face in this
Yeah, that's no
issue on
that's
page
brilliant. Yeah,
90,
that's
which is,
yeah, that's what I'd like to see more from him. But occasionally they're a little bit too facially too statuesque to me, too off in the distance sometimes. It's probably
Yeah, I can see that. There is certain shop mannequin look to
Yes,
some of his
good point.
faces.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do they have at Madame Tussauds?
The
A little
waxworks,
waxworky face sometimes. But yeah, people will hate me for that. But there you go. But the, yeah, outstanding, just brilliant. And I remember as a kid even thinking, oh, there's another Barry Windsor Smith issue. I'll pore over that one. And it came in the middle of some quite sort of trite storytelling, didn't it? But it was like the high point that appeared. For those that are looking for.
I mean, I think they were high points when they arrived, these single issues.
Yeah. And I think for those that are looking for the Weapon X story, it's Marvel Comics Presents 72 to 84. And I think they put out one of those, are they called True Believers specials or something? Like those cheap reprints they put out recently, which has got the whole of the story in it, which is pretty well done. A little bit brightly coloured, but there you go.
I've got it digitally now, and I've also got the other one I bought was the Marvel Art of Conan the Barbarian
Oh,
one
nice.
on Comixology as well. because you get Barry Windsor-Smith, you got John Buscema, you get some Gil
Yeah.
Kane. Yeah, you get some
You get
wonderful
sort of the
stuff in
Incas as
there.
well, like Ernie Chan and Pablos Marcos and all these sort of people. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, really nice. Cool. Nice one, man. Thanks for that. Right, we're gonna break for our sponsor. We've got a very exciting new sponsor as of last week.
Ooh, I
Yeah,
can't wait. Here
and
we
then
go.
we'll have a little chat about what you're up to. Now a pause for a word from our sponsor. Being at home all day on your own, boring, isn't it? Craving a good snarky argument? Then why not join Twitter? You too can take offence about the smallest presumed wrongdoing and spend all year ranting about it to people who agree with you. No need to move from your chair. Brackets, do not drink whilst operating Twitter. There you go. Glad to have Twitter on board. Thanks for that, guys. Very exciting.
Yeah, opinions from people who know nothing, including
Yeah,
me.
me. Yeah, definitely.
And operators are standing by to take your call.
G'day. So, you're rock.
You know that chap who does the TV advert voices, Matt
Oh,
Berry,
yeah. The people
Tony?
say I look
I
like him
reckon
all
you
the
could
time.
take
Yeah, I
him.
reckon.
I reckon you could take him, yeah.
That's the shame because I really like him. And he's not a bad singer as well. If you listen to any of his folk albums, they're all on
Oh, he
Spotify.
does these weird folky albums,
Yeah.
doesn't he?
But
Yeah.
he's so. I can't listen to that radio. Is it? I can't remember the radio station he's on there, but I can't listen to it because it's an advert by him every 5 minutes. And all I want to do is hear him shout things like, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. Yeah.
Money supermarket, Clem Fandango.
Yeah, good stuff. So you're rocking on the Mega City Book Club podcast. You're just really going well, man. Some absolutely brilliant ones at the moment. So we mentioned, I know before we started recording, the Misty one, which is a brilliant one. Do you want to just mention that one?
Well, that's my favorite episode that I've done
Right,
recently.
okay.
So, this is a lady called Julia Round, who's a lecturer in English, but she's also an academic, and she one of her areas of expertise is British girls comics. And if for anybody who doesn't know, Misty, short-lived 2-year horror comic for for girls from the late 1970s. Another one of those comics that was sort of kick-started by Pat Mills,
Yeah.
where he would get, the ideas going and get a team together and set them off and running on it, which he did quite a lot then, I
Yeah, we
think,
did in 2000 AD, and he's currently doing it with Space Warp. What's his space? Yeah,
He
yeah.
is exactly putting together a new team and putting together a new comic. So there we have. We've got this Misty, which, I think for blokes like you and me, Tony, we wouldn't read a girls
No, obviously
comic, but
not.
actually we heard about it over the years that actually there was some good scary stuff in
Yeah.
there. So Julia Round has written a book about it and about the gothic themes that they used in the stories and these creepy stories for girls. And I got her on my most recent episode, episode 122 on megacitybookclub.com. And she talks about her book, she talks about Misty, and it has, as somebody said on the forum, her scholarship and her enthusiasm for the subject was so
Yeah,
obvious.
definitely. Yeah.
And I was just trying to hang on for dear life, Tony, trying to keep up
The
with
other thing I'm
her.
surprised about is she said she hadn't been asked to write anything. And I'm thinking, Christ, get her writing on those Misty specials straight away, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you've read an article about Misty in either the Judge Dredd magazine or Comic Scene magazine
Yep.
recently, it's probably written by Julia
Okay.
Round. But she has written a few sort of short comics of her own. And yeah, they haven't asked her to write for Misty and Scream special yet, but
Yeah, get on that.
they should
Yeah,
do.
definitely.
Yes.
And the other one,
So
go on, sorry.
that was
Yeah.
great. Yeah. So that was, it was great fun to record, and I really enjoyed the reaction we got to that one as
A couple
well.
of the other ones I just wanted to mention was the Oddams one. Is it Captain Tomorrow? Is that the name?
No, it's Johnny
John, oh, what am I
Future, the
talking about?
man of
Yeah.
tomorrow, I think, Tony.
And
Yeah.
I shared a bumped in literally bumped into Keith Richardson at a bar at Angoulême earlier this year. Both of us quite drunk, and it was the night that we left Europe. If you see what I mean,
Oh,
so
right.
all
Oh,
the English were in the
dear.
bar waiting for midnight to commiserate and just drink heavily. And
Oh,
he and
dear.
I had a quite a boozy conversation about all the books that he's getting out of. You know, he's in charge. So he's in charge of what's it called again?
So he's got the Treasury of British Comics. He's the senior graphic novels editor at
Right.
Rebellion. And so one of the things he's particularly doing, again, with his team, is he's got this archive of IPC or Fleetway or whatever they were called at the time, comics going back decades and decades. And they're picking and choosing from it and putting out collections. So they've put out collections of Misty. They found this Oddams stuff, this strip, this British superhero, Johnny Future, and they've put out a collection of that. They've done the Trigon Empire
Okay. Love that, yeah.
recently, which, I mean, talk about Barry Windsor-Smith art,
Yeah.
Don Lawrence's art in the Trigon Empire.
Yeah, good
If you've
point.
never come across the Trigon Empire book, again, another artist who's featured in David Roach's book, Don Lawrence, who's not only a great artist but was also a great
Yeah.
teacher, and in like we know Liam Sharp and Chris Weston were sort of
Yeah, that Chris Weston
apprenticed to
episode
him.
we talked about last time is a great one, man. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, so that was
Yeah.
good. Yeah, so that's the Treasury of British Comics with Keith Richardson from Rebellion, and they're putting out great stuff. So he was on episode 119 back in April, Johnny
Yeah,
Future.
I have to say they're one of the reasons my postman hates me because I never buy them and troll, carry them all the way across London to get on the train. I think I'll be easier if I get the postman to carry them all the day, And that's quite a book, The
Yeah.
Trigon Empire. And I think there's two more volumes coming, is there, I think?
At least two
Yeah.
more of those coming over the next year and a half,
And
I
the other one
think.
I just want to
Yeah.
quickly mention is probably my favourite of your guests, who I think is a recurring guest, is Conrad. Is it Space Spinner, the podcast? The
Oh,
most
Conrad Lydon from
enthusiastic
Space
man.
Spinner
Yeah.
2000.
And
Yeah.
he did Max
So,
Zero, didn't he? Which I love Max Zero.
yes, he did Mach Zero, which he loves as well. So Conrad Lydon is an American guy who, with his friend Fox, has started a podcast called Space Spinner 2000. And what they're doing is they're going through 2000 AD right the way from Prog 1 and reading a month's worth of issues for each
Right,
episode.
okay.
And they are so enthusiastic and so, they're just enjoying it and having a great time reading these ancient British comics. So yeah, he's been on them. He's been on my show a few times because he is
Yeah.
just such an enthusiast about this early stuff, the black and white days of 2000 AD and Mach Zero, written by Steve McManus, the Mighty One himself.
Yeah,
So
and
yeah,
Mike, is it Mike Dory draws it, I think. Yeah.
Mike Dorey artwork, doing black and white artwork, and then going over it with a J cloth to smudge the ink and make it look all misty and
Oh,
shadowy and
really?
strange.
Okay.
So yeah.
I think I mistakenly, when I came on your podcast, we were talking about what you're reading at the moment. I mentioned Mac One. I just bought the trade to the second trade, I think. So the, and and I'd only just started it without realizing when I was bemoaning to you that Mac Zero wasn't in print. Is that in the back of it?
It
Yeah.
is, yes, we found that
Yeah.
out. It's the second half of the book is Mach Zero, thank
Yeah.
goodness.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Really good stuff. And you were right. The Flowers for Algernon thing, man. Straight away. Yeah. Completely. Completely.
Yes. Yeah,
Yeah.
Mach Zero, yeah.
What have you got coming up? You got much on the books ready? So we had one drop today, didn't we? Just as we were recording.
So there's a Gordon Rennie and Tin and Trevelyan series from 2000 AD called
Yep.
Absalom. And as we recorded on a Sunday, that's episode about the last volume of that, Terminal Diagnosis, has just dropped. Coming up, we've got some more classic British comics. We're going to do an episode about One-Eyed
Oh, cool.
Jack, which was a very sort of
The
like
John Wagner one. Is it John
hard
Wagner? Yeah.
nose. Yeah, it is John Wagner from the 1970s doing a sort of a Dirty Harry cop,
Yeah.
basically. And then one I haven't recorded yet, but I'm quite looking forward to is talking about another classic British comics character. Another one of those comic, British characters who was slightly anti-hero-ish was Janus Stark or Janus
Yes.
Stark. I don't know if you remember
Mate,
him. He was the rubber-boned
I'm the
escapologist.
hugest Janus Stark fan. I've been like lobbying. Funny enough, that day that I met Keith Richardson, I basically, as soon as I knew who he was, I lobbied to write a new series of Janus Stark. The I've got pages, original pages. I've even got the French because it continued in French. It went over into
Yes, it
yeah,
did.
and I bought the French copies, not being a great reader of French, but I bought them just because it fell out of favor over here a bit, and they stopped publishing it. But the French loved it, I think.
Yes, I mean it's. I find it's astonishing that Europe would sometimes pick up these British comic strips and then just continue
Yeah.
them. So Janus Stark, jumps to France, and Billy's Boots, that Rich Chief, you've had on
Yeah,
your
love Rich.
podcast, this
Yeah.
podcast, a couple of times. He did Billy's Boots with me, and of course Billy's Boots huge in
Oh, really?
Holland.
Okay. Maybe
Yeah,
it's all
who
the
would have
drugs. They
thought?
keep forgetting that the story's going to be he loses his boots again. They just, oh, what happens this? Oh, he's lost his boots. They just can't remember because they're so stoned. Maybe that's the reason. Yeah.
Well, there's a certain Billy's Boots to Janus Stark because each issue you've got to find some way for him to be trapped in a
Yes, that's
tight
true.
spot,
Yeah,
haven't
yeah.
you?
I always found him quite scary, Janus Stark, as a kid. I thought he's.
I thought he was scary. He's a good guy, but he's a scary one. I always found he was
Yeah.
scary. And I always had that. I mean, we'll talk about this when I get to this
Yeah.
episode, but I always had that thing. of hating being trapped in a confined space.
Yeah.
And of course, every episode of Jaina Stark,
he's trapped in a barrel or something, isn't he? You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Or squeezes out in the space of a brick that he managed to pull out of a wall or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Reminds me, I must get that framed. I've got a page. Fairly inexpensive, some of this UK art stuff. If you can find it at the right price, there's some. I was eyeing up some. This is the other thing you've done to me. You've made me watch this, The Bionic Man, The $6 Million Man. I've dug out two of the old box sets, which I have to say, after talking about you talking about Mac 1, I said, oh, I'm going to watch that while I'm editing the podcast later. Yeah, yeah. Well, so beyond that, Eamon, you and I are both the same in that we tend to read what is coming up for the next pod and kind of do a bit of a deep dive on it. What else are you reading? Is there anything else you're reading at the moment?
I'm currently on a reread of Sandman.
Oh, you're a big Sandman fan, aren't you?
Yeah, big Sandman fan. And my daughter, Jenny, who's also a big Sandman fan, we did an episode of my podcast where we talked about A Game of You, which was, you know, an interesting Sandman story from the sort of the middle of the 75-issue series. Yeah. So what we've decided to do is we're going to go back and we're going to do all the individual trade collections.
Oh, nice.
So... and we're going to put those out on a separate podcast feed. We won't, you know, won't clutter up the 2000 AD fans more Sandman.
That's a nice idea. That's a lovely idea, man. Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm rereading Sandman and finding that some of the early issues have got a few problems and issues with them.
Right.
But it becomes, you know, I think Neil Gaiman becomes the complete writer as he does that series.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's...
That's going to be timely because the audio play is coming out soon, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly, there's audio plays.
Yeah.
And there is, of course, still talk about the TV series. That will be coming out hopefully in the next month or two on a separate feed, but I'll put it up on my website for megacitybookclub.com as well.
Part of me doesn't want it to be a TV series, I'll be honest with you. Because...
I'd be happy if it stayed a comic.
I don't want people going, why is this one all about cats on the internet? Why is this one back in Shakespeare? Yeah. You know, why is this, what's all this Shakespeare nonsense and stuff like that? And I'm like, oh, you won't understand it, general public. I already hate you. You know, it's like that.
I've just, as you say that, I've just got to the cats issue and the Shakespeare issue.
Cool.
So, I've just recently read those again. Lots of flesh... Johnny Alpha, Slain, Mean Arena, Bad Company, all of those hopefully coming up. I'm hoping to get Tony Foster from Comic Scene magazine. He's agreed to come back on and do like one of my pet projects because we're going to talk about Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Oh, nice. Love that series, man.
So yeah. I've been rereading some of that recently and I bought the first volume of the Absolute Swamp Thing from Alan Moore and then got into a... as you do, an internet sort of argument about the recoloring decisions.
I'm a huge fan. I got the hardbacks when they came out a few years ago. I think I got the sort of five of them.
Those are lovely. Yeah. I've got those.
But I also got the Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson stuff is great, you know, as well. I just
it is
amazing in a different way. You know.
Yeah. Lovely. I mean, Bernie Wrightson was at the London Super Comic Con and I got him to sign one of those early Swamp Thing issues for me. So that's, one of my prized possessions.
I know Vince is a huge Wrightson fan. I am as well, but he absolutely dies for him. Vince Hunt, 40, on the 18th. There you go, just in case anyone's wondering.
There you go. Well, the Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein
there
book.
You go, there perfect you go. Present. Everyone send it to him.
Get him on the podcast to do
yeah, good
that.
Good chat, actually. Yeah. Good, oh man. Thanks for that. Let's do the little outro. So there you have it. Hopefully you got something out of that. You can find me over at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. Buy my comics. You can find me on A Proper Podcast, The Awesome Comics Podcast Weekly with Vince and Dan. Follow me on Twitter, Ezoyez, if they'll still have me on. So where can people find you, Eamon?
You can find me on megacitybookclub.com where you'll find all my episodes and all the links to everything else. And if you're on Twitter, Tony's sponsor, MCBC Podcast on Twitter, you'll find me putting out details of my episodes.
Excellent stuff. Look at almost an hour, just one issue, and we've managed to talk for it. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
Great stuff, man. Spot and I'll speak to you in a second when we stop recording. See you later, man.
Cheers, Tony. Thanks.